It's the Tiltcast episode 591. It's a frisky dog.
And this week, guys, we talk more 7 Days to Die, the official 1.0 release, Final Fantasy 14 Online, The Last Spell, and AI tools. Stay tuned.
Tasty dog.
Yeah, he's guzzling glizzies.
Lake cans.
I wasn't ready.
We're back. It's the Tiltcast. It's an M-rated show. I'm Nas.
I'm Jason.
I'm choking on a wiener.
It's Rusty. The glizzy guzzler. And with the three of us, you're going to get about 30 minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Some games, some news. It is 91 feels like 97 on July. What day is it? In late July. Late July. July the 28th on a Sunday at 1:49 p.m. in Green Country, Oklahoma. Yeah, we've been, I don't know what happened, but Rusty was in the middle of eating hot dogs, and I didn't realize he hadn't finished eating hot dogs. And I was like, I'm going to hit the button. He's like, I'm choking. It's like, on what? He's like, on wieners.
He said, I'm going to try to do this in one whole go.
No.
And then the universe screamed,
don't try it.
I started to imagine him trying to deep throat a hot dog, and I immediately regretted that thought.
No. I have a certain set of skills, and that's not one of them.
Fair enough.
Holy.
It's been a busy week. It's going to be a busy week next week.
It has been a very busy week.
I won't be here next week. I'll be in Dallas, my girlfriend, celebrating my birthday.
Okay.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I'll be going to see a show.
I'm over here making random noises. That's okay.
You're hiccuping because you had glizzies down your throat.
Dude. That was the fastest I've ever eaten a hot dog, okay?
That's the ultimate bachelor lunch right there. The air-fried hot dog, of all things, the air-fried hot dog.
Hey, it's better than nuked.
Yeah, I wouldn't eat a nuked hot dog.
See, a nuked hot dog just comes out rubbery and flaccid, and
air fry it. It gets frisky.
Yeah, when you air fry it,
crispy.
It's nice and firm. Has a good snap to it.
It's a frisky dog.
Look, yeah, it is. It said you only had to do the tip, Rusty.
But somebody was rushing me.
Overachiever over there tried to deep throat it.
Somebody was rushing me, and they're like, we need to record. And I'm like,
I mean, I've been over here raw dogging it. I have three computers in this house. I have my work computer, I have the podcast computer, and I have the gaming computer. Well, I'm not going to work while I'm waiting on you guys. So I'm just sitting here staring at an empty screen, Jason's little Discord logo. Because he doesn't even have like an icon for his name on Discord. It's just the Discord logo. I'm talking. I'm like, there is nobody here.
Right. So you were talking to yourself?
Basically.
Cool.
Unlike you two, who also have this hooked up to your gaming computer. So you wait. You can just sit there and play video games and goof off. I don't even have that option.
I wasn't goofing off or playing video games. I was fucking almost dying on a hot dog.
It has been a busy week, right? Jason, you've been camping again, right?
Yep.
What is this, like week three of camping this summer?
Wait, sorry, no. This week wasn't camping. This week was just catching up at work because I was off all week the week prior. So, like, I was at work until 5 or 6 o'clock every night.
Yeah, I've got be gone next weekend, and the following week I'll be out of state for work for half a week.
And then, because it rained twice while we were camping, you know, and I didn't have anybody to, like, come over and shock the dang pool on short notice right after the rain. When we came home from camping Saturday before yesterday, the pool was just algae.
Just green.
Well, luckily, like, the algae really wasn't suspended, but we had, like, fuzzy algae growth on the bottom of the pool. Like, all across the entire fucking bottom. And it was starting to come up the sides of the pool, right?
Yeah, I don't have that. I've been fighting it now for a month, and then I've been running my filter nonstop for a month, which sucks because I got that electric bill. And you know, it's always higher. My electric bill is almost $400.
Jesus.
It was $100 higher this month than it was last year. I've been running that pump nonstop, and, you know, and then backwashing it, you know, get the algae out. And it's just been a really rainy July. So, like, I haven't been able to turn off the filter. Mine hasn't gotten fuzzy on the bottom, but I can run the brush on the bottom and pick up little bits of algae still, and so that bothers me. But I've been shocking it every other day.
Yeah. So basically, after working till 5 or 6 every night, then I would come home and I would spend. So Monday through Thursday, I spent 3 hours each evening when I got home vacuuming out the pool. And if anybody has bought an above ground pool in the last few years, you know, Intex, who makes most of the above ground pools, even if it's branded Coleman or Best Way or whatever, it's all Intex shit, right? They got smart and they started including bigger pumps that have sand filters on them, which is great. They work much more efficiently, and they don't burn out like the old ones used to. But they don't have a lot of suction because they still use the small, like, 3/4 of an inch or 1 inch, like, tubing for the outlets and run that to a T-junction into a full-size, like, 1.5-inch hose to connect to the pump. Well, that doesn't give you a whole lot of suction because you're sucking out, you know, you're trying to pull out of the pool through a 3/4-inch opening. So what I ended up doing, I still had like a regular like 1.5-inch like filter hose, and believe it or not, from the first time we got a sand filter, I still had a bunch of like these neoprene rubber adapters to go down from the 1.5-inch down into the 3/4, because my old pool didn't have set up for that natively, because my old pool was like over 10 years old. So I just used one of those to couple the standard vacuum hose into the Intex shit, and get rid of the smaller hoses and the T-junction altogether. So I was just running straight vacuum hose into the filter, to then waste vacuum all the algae out. But it took me, those 12 hours for those 4 days, and then Friday I had the day off. So before because we were doing this, but this thing with some friends over in Muskogee, family friends. Before we went out there, I spent another 4 hours. So 16 hours total vacuuming out all of this algae. And basically an entire pool fill up. Because when you're waste vacuuming that much algae, you're vacuuming water out faster than you can put new water in with your garden hose. Right? All I did was basically keep enough equilibrium so that I never physically ran the pool more than a third empty. But I was putting new water in every night.
That water bill's gonna suck.
Yep. That water bill is gonna suck, but I mean you gotta do what you gotta do, because the one thing that leaving algae that thick sitting in your pool will do is it will eventually just ruin your liner. Right? So it had to come out. Plus, you know, we just want to relax in the pool, which is what we're going to do once we're done recording here. So, suffice it to say, I didn't really play any games. Though, the one interesting thing, sort of adjacent, because I do it on my computer and it's for this podcast, I finally fully integrated Stable Diffusion into the image editing process for our title cards.
So you are AI in that motherfucker.
At least when I need to, you know, for parts like, you know, previous episode being Boss Sauce, I was like, well, I want to do like just a custom like hot sauce bottle so that there's no chance of anybody finding out and trying to, you know, like copyright strike our tiny little podcast here.
Oh my God.
I created a custom hot sauce label for the episode. So that title card I generated and then put together every single element on that label.
I mean, if it works.
I mean, it works, it works. It also, I figured out how to, because Stable Diffusion is not like Dolly or Midjourney or Photoshop or even Meta AI or Google's Gemini, where it's got tools specifically built into it for like object replacement, right? There are ways to do it, but it's all text prompting. So the real learning curve to Stable Diffusion is learning kind of how to put together a text prompt and how to edit certain elements of the text prompt to get what you need. Which was really, which is a pretty steep learning curve to generate something that looks decent.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not an artist, so, I'll just keep that to myself. I don't know. Justin, do you have a thing about AI?
Yeah, so things it can't replace. So in the photo world, right, like, it can't replace taking photos of a live performance, right? It can't replace doing things or you're capturing moments, it can alter how somebody looks for promo, though, right? So in the world of me creating promos and things like that for people, yeah, people could use AI to help with that.
It can also be helpful for light enhancement, or if you're trying to generate like a different light source on an image.
It always does
really well at that.
No, it doesn't. It's very artificial, and I notice it immediately when people use it. I'll give you an example of how AI is being used a lot in photography. So there's a product called Topaz AI, right? I do use it for one very specific thing. I take a lot of photos in very dark rooms, right? A lot of venues I go to, I don't take a lot of pictures of really big bands. I take a lot of pictures of a lot of really small acts. And 9 times out of 10, the lighting in there is shit. And so I'm taking photos anywhere from 6,400 to 12,800 ISO. And when you're doing that, you have a grainy image. Now, grainy image can be saved if everything's in focus. And what Topaz does a better job of than Lightroom does is removing that ISO noise. So ISO noise will leave all these little colored dots all over everything. Now, if your image is really sharp, as in it's in very good focus, when it does its noise removal, you won't even know that I took it in a very dark room, right? So it does a really good job at that. Where I see a lot of it, and I won't name names around the local area that does it a lot and annoys the piss out of me, is in face recovery. So face recovery done right, what it'll do is it'll, let's say I take a picture at a really low aperture, right? And I'm taking a group shot of a band. And because my plane of focus is, you know, let's just say it's a foot, right? Because I have to be wide open. And I've got two people on the other side of the vocalist, and they're just outside of that range. I can use that at a very low setting to just help pull out a little bit of detail from the faces to make them a little bit sharper. And that's fine. But I see a lot of people that are trying to shoot further closed. So like an aperture of 4.5 or even maybe a 7.1. And when they're doing that, because it's so dark, they're losing a lot of detail in the face, and they're trying to do that for a stage shot. And then they use Topaz AI to do face recovery. And all the faces to me look plastic because it over smoothens. And so people use the face recovery tool in that a lot. And I think it looks really weird. I notice it. You won't notice it on a Facebook image that's at a lower resolution on your phone or a smaller actual size on your phone, right? Unless you're looking at it on a tablet. I edit a lot on my 65-inch OLED. And so I notice it immediately. I'll look at, you know, because when I'm posting stuff to social media, I'm doing it through my computer. I'm not doing it through my phone. Something you may or may not know is if you have an iPhone, and this drives me bananas too, I'll give people photos and then they'll use their iPhone to, I don't know, they're like screen capturing it or something. Whatever they're doing it, when they download it and re-upload it, it's at like 1/3 the original resolution and the picture's grainy. We'll give them a super crisp, sharp image. And then like 10 minutes later, I'm looking at it and it's like, I know you did that through an iPhone because it looks like shit. Like even my logo, my watermark is a little bit grainy, right? It does something to it. But anyways, what I'm getting at is I'm pulling up Facebook or Insta or whatever on my computer and blowing something up full size to make sure it looks right. And even when I reduce the size of something, so I take a picture at 6,000 by 4,000 pixels, right? And then I'll reduce it to 40%. Even at 40%, if it doesn't look sharp on my 65-inch TV at 40%, then I just throw the image away. And I will not use the face recovery to try to recover an image. I just pick whatever image is sharpest and the best pose for, you know, the best lighting. But I've tried to use the lighting tools in Topaz to relight a scene because it was super dark and it just looks unnatural and weird to me. Where it could be really helpful is, say I shoot photos in a really dark area and a mic stand gets in the way. And the mic stand, otherwise, if it was out of the way, would be a salvageable photo. I have used AI one or two times to remove objects from the foreground, to help fill in some details on a scene. But 9 times out of 10, like that's to get it to where I can't tell that it was AI that removed it. It takes me too long. to select the image and make sure that I'm only grabbing the thing that I want to get out of the way, and then it doesn't unnaturally fill things. Like, I've noticed that Topaz 2 will relight a scene, and you can use it to relight and balance color. And if it's an unnatural color, like stage lights naturally are stage lights always are. They're always pinks and blues and reds and greens, right? It'll make the image like green or a weird purple, and people look like monsters. And I'm just like, that's not what I wanted you to do. And so I'll go back in and use Lightroom's color toning tool and rebalance color manually on stuff when I think the there's way too much pink in a scene or way too much blue in a scene to make it look a little bit more natural. But yeah, like if I just had a photo I couldn't live without, like there's some times that AI might be okay to save it. But most of the time, as somebody who does photos now professionally, I don't screw with that. I'll say to hell with it. I've got five other images that are just as good, if not exactly the exact image that I wanted, that I'm just going to use instead because they're already sharp. I don't have something in the foreground and it was already lit better, instead of trying to like manipulate and save it with AI. And I don't think you notice that stuff if you're editing on a small screen as much. And I don't know if a lot of guys that are doing some of this stuff professionally are using a smaller screen, but like they use that face recovery tool too much. And I'm sick of looking at rubber faces on photos. So I don't know. My particular brand for me anyway is presenting the best side of me possible. And that is making sure my shit is razor sharp. And so I just won't have it any other way. You know, if I'm a perfectionist in anything, that's what I'm a perfectionist is in. And I'm know when I have a shit shot, I'm not going to try to save a shit shot. Just grab the ones that I did a good job at, you know?
Yeah.
That's a long rant. That's me on AI though. Like there's AI that's been used for other things. I think for like helping you with textures in a game, like that might be helpful, right? I think AI in general should be used to help us do the mundane so that we can focus on the things that are more fulfilling, right? Use the AI to, you know, help design things that are, you know, I don't know, better, stronger concrete. I don't know. Help me with design AI for a robot to help me with mowing the lawn, right? But AI for art's sake, I don't want a computer to create what's a human expression.
Right.
That bothers me. Music, AI and music, that drives me bananas too.
Oh, yeah.
Occasionally it's okay, and that's the part that's scary. And I think there's a lot of like electronic artists that are using it for filling in gaps on different things too in their songwriting. I think that's kind of dangerous too.
See, the only thing I use AI for, you know, is for coding, in coding assistance. So with a lot of different programming languages, there's different ways to do shit. You can do a small object in a program about 80 different fucking ways. That's just efficiency is, you know, where you're going to run into, you know, issues. Like, can you do this in five lines of code or 30 lines of code, right? It's, you know, that's really the big difference. thing for, you know, for me, I will pick it up for, you know, quick scripts. It doesn't actually get it right, you know, the first time, most of the time, but at least it gets you there. Like, it does most of the base work for you, and then you just, you tweak it a little bit to, you know, to meet your needs, and it saves probably, you know, a good half an hour worth of fucking figuring something out, you know? That's what I would, you know, end up using AI for, is not necessarily to do the job, but as a tool to kind of do most of the mundane part of the job and then fine tune it.
Yeah. And that's basically what I'm doing. Like, it's learning how to use it to do some fine tuning instead of full on generation. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, and if we look at it from like a gaming context, if what I would like to see, you know, AI used for is to
increase the actual base quality of code, but I don't want it to be used for anything creative in that game. You know,
it could just be for like, okay, I need to tweak the pathing for these. You know, here's the problem. I'm having an issue with pathing of my NPCs in this game. AI, is there a way to make the code that I have currently more efficient or effective? And then it shoots out a suggestion and then you build off of that, right?
Right. You know, and that's kind of what, you know, what I'd like to see, you know, just, you know, like in a gaming context or, you know, in a coding context, really. There's so many games that are just, especially older games. It's old code written on, you know, old code base with new code written on top of it, and you end up with this freaking spaghetti situation where you got spaghetti code, right? And one thing will like hit 18,000 different other things, and it's just a pain in the ass to work with. AI can help with that and try to, you know, make it more efficient, optimize games, things like that. But I don't want it to create a character. I don't want it to create a voice. I don't want it to create a scene. I don't want it to create lines. I want all that to be human, because that's something that is unique to us. Like that creativity is lost if you give it to a computer. And everything just feels empty. Like, you know, you were saying the images that, you know, you know, that are touched with, you know, with AI, they make the faces plastic. That's what I feel like with, you know, just about any type of creative project that's been touched with AI is, feels artificial. It looks wrong. It feels wrong. And you don't get anything out of it as a, you know, as a consumer of that product. It's just, it feels empty. And that's why when you know, are doom scrolling through Facebook and shit like that, and you end up with fucking AI generated bullshit fucking, you know, bullshit things that pop up on like TikTok or whatever, you know, or Facebook Reels or whatever the hell you're going to use, you can tell which ones are created by AI, you know, and the fact that you can tell that just on a fundamental level is just like, this is, it's like empty calories. it feels like it's just packaging, you know? So, I mean, I will always, you know, I will go and say that it's a very good tool. And I understand, Jason, that you use, I'm not dogging on you for using AI. It just, I don't know, just the fact that that triggered something and I needed to talk about it.
No, it's okay. Like, I think it's an important discussion. And I think as fast as I don't know if you guys have seen it, there's a comparison of Will Smith eating spaghetti last year versus Will Smith eating spaghetti this year made by AI.
Yeah.
And it is exponential growth.
Right.
And it's like, it looks almost, there's very, I really couldn't, there's something off about it and I couldn't tell you exactly what it is. It might be the eye contact from the character that AI created. And it could be that they solved the issue with the spaghetti, right? I think the spaghetti and the fingers were having some issues. But the it's like from clay animation to like video. It's in 12 months. Like, the growth is so exponential. I just worry about what it's doing this time next year, right?
Oh, yeah.
I want it to help solve problems, but I don't want it to take over what we do for fulfillment. And that's the real issue I have with it. And it's weird that NVIDIA, like if you think about it, NVIDIA 10 years ago was just a graphics card maker essentially, right? And now their main business is AI. They're a $1 trillion company.
Oh, yeah.
They went from a several million dollar company to a $1 trillion company in like 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, and that, like they were definitely at the top of graphics cards, right? Like, yeah, we bought their graphics cards, and now they're like the central hub of all technology right now, which is crazy.
I definitely wish I had jumped on the, on the stock wagon for that way long time ago.
Yeah, we all do.
I could retire now.
We can hope, you know, if we can ever back to the future like Biff did, right, and start investing in all the right things. But anywho, video games. Video games.
Yeah,
we've all been pretty busy. I mean, I'm just super short recap. Just been doing photos and then actually went to a show for a show's sake this week. My buddy was opening for a band called A Killer's Confession. So I went and saw them, met the guy, had a really good conversation, built. I go to this particular venue so often as a photographer. I was there for the first time in a long time without my camera, and the bartender, Hugh, is like, "Where's your gear?" I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, I don't see your camera bag." I was like, "Well, sometimes I like to go to a show for a show's sake." And I was like, "I'm here for my buddy's band. And, you know, he's opening for a larger band. And I'm just here." It's like, "Oh." And he's like, "Well, don't mind if I start pimping you." I was like, "All right." And so he pimped me to the one of the other bands, I guess, is playing there later this month. And Hugh has some of my cards. It wasn't very long after that that I had a tap on the shoulder and somebody wanted me to do some photos. And then Hugh oversold me, meaning that he thinks that I charge a lot more than I do. So that wasn't a bad thing. And then he had also sold me to the lead singer of the other band that's going to be headlining here in a few months when they come back. Because they were... I watched them with Drowning Pool. I hate Drowning Pool. But they were the headliner, right? Everybody's here heard Down With The Sickness. Drowning Pool, in my mind, is like the Nickelback of nu metal. Like it's like Nickelback meets Disturbed. Like it's boring, uninspired bullshit. Jason, if you like it, I'm sorry. I sometimes an elitist snob. But anyways, yes, and then I ended up meeting the guy and got to talk to him for a little bit. That was really fun. But and then last night I did a bunch of photos for a comedy. I have a friend of mine that's trying to start a comedy movement in Oklahoma City, and last night he had so. Let's leave politics out of this, but like Roseanne Barr has been a comedian for decades, right? One of the girls that was been opening for her, was on like a little solo tour, and it happens that she's actually from Moore, Oklahoma, which is where I was at. My buddy snagged her as his headliner. And again, this is a smaller group, right? There's like 100 people at this little comedy club. No, it's not even a comedy club. My buddy, has good connections with a restaurant that also does events, and he gets them to host comedy shows. After 6 o'clock on Saturdays every other month. So he got her and then got somebody that I don't know if you call it winning, but like somebody who did really good at Kill Tony. Do you guys know what Kill Tony is?
I do not know.
So it's a comedy show, kind of like a comedy contest. It's in Austin. And anyways, this guy, you're trying to make this guy laugh, right? Like a legendary comedian. And here, let me see if I can. What's his last name? Let's see. Tony Hinchcliffe. So anyways. So like he has a bunch of unknowns come on his show, right? It's kind of like Shark Tank for comedians, right? Or what's the song and dance show? That's got Simon, what's America's his name?
Got Talent or
yeah, it's like whatever. That for comedy, basically, and it's based in Austin. This guy was one of the guys that had won Kill Tony, so he had that guy, and then my buddy was hosting. He had some comedy, and then he had a couple of local guys. So it was really fun. It was different photographing a comedy event because live music events, I'm generally on stage or very close to the performers, right? kind of weaving in and out, trying to get good angles and stuff like that. Well, comedy, I'm not going to be right up on somebody's grill the whole time. So I had to pretend I was a ninja in this dark area with my zoom lens, and it was like I was just trying to stay obscure. And of course, the second guy to go on, you know, he knew I was doing it. He was going to fuck with me the whole time. So every now and then he'd be like, I'm going to get my free headshot. He'd just do some stupid pose. And then every comedian after that picked up on that. So every single comedian that night fucked with me last night, which is pretty funny. And they all did it in different ways. It was a pretty fun show. But yeah, I've played some video games. Rusty, have you been up to anything recently?
Let's see. Yeah, I've been playing a little bit more of the whole Final Fantasy thing. And I do plan on actually, you know, getting some video. I keep saying that I'm going to, but I want to do get some video of me doing from a healer's perspective doing the raid series, which in Final Fantasy or in MMO terms, Final Fantasy raids are basically they're zero trash, one boss encounters. So it's not like a raid from World of Warcraft or anything like that. You just go in, beat the shit out of a boss, and, you know, get your loot and leave, which is really nice. Because, you know, I mean, you can bang that out in like 10 minutes, you know? And they tend to have unique attack patterns and requirements for you to survive the encounter and stuff, and you get to see a lot of people fail at doing that, especially on the normal raid series. And it's a little more forgiving for pickup groups and randoms. The savage raids are exactly that. They're fucking savage. They you can't be in the wrong spot or you instagib. So I don't do those. That's the tryhard series, and I am well past my tryhard days. I do just the normal shit. I don't need to have the best of the best anymore. And that was one of the things that keeps me coming back to the Final Fantasy, is that it's possible and completely okay for you to not be in a raiding guild or anything like that, be like the best of the best of the best of the best of the best. You could just kind of pick and choose what you want to do. And like right now, I'm fucking beating rocks while talking to you, and it takes zero brain power for me to do that. So it's definitely something that I can do very easily while like watching a YouTube video or learning a different, learning a programming language or some bullshit, just like you can do this just while you're doing other things. But yeah, it's, it's an MMO. It doesn't change very often. There is a new patch coming up here very soon. I think I want to say it's next week or the week after. I can't remember exactly, but that's when the next difficulty of raids is coming out, and when the tryhards really try hard. It's also the best time to be a crafter, because the people who are trying hard, they tend to have a lot of money, and
what does that make a
difference? Buy shit. Because they can't wait for, random shit that, for their crafters to actually just go through the whole process of crafting it for them. So they just go to the market board and buy shit. So if you're...
Can you buy gold like you could in WoW? Like with real money?
I mean, that's a thing that you can do in just about any game ever. Obviously, it's against terms of service. People look
it's looked down upon. And really, in this game, there's really no reason to. Because even as a combat character, like a person who's never picked up a crafting tool, you can get stuff that you can sell to crafters that, you know, just through combat that will make you a decent amount of money. So there's really no reason to have a massive amount of money unless you're going to spend it, you know, on like the very first day of a raid drop. And then you've got months to regain all that money back. So there really is zero reason to buy money in this game because, I mean, just playing the game, you get it. So, I mean, it happens. And there's bots and there's, you know, very regular, band waves that happen, you know, when those bots get caught and, you know, they get banned and a lot of shit happens. But I mean, there's, why would you, I don't understand the whole reason behind botting and any of that shit anyway, because I mean, you're paying to play a game. Why would you?
Yeah, people get super obsessed with stuff. I mean,
yes,
there was that viral picture a few years ago of that older guy, I think in Japan, that had like 45 smartphones on different parts of his bicycle going around catching Pokemon with the Pokemon mobile game, right? Like, people get obsessed with weird shit.
Well, you know what that was? You know what that was, right?
No.
That guy was actually selling his services and taking people's phones and doing the Pokemon Go thing for them while they were working.
What?
So he was making money.
That's even more insane.
So he was making money, and the, you know, the people who were, you know, paying him just wanted to, you know, to have him go around, you know, picking up Pokemon while they were at work.
That's even more insane.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, there is that old adage. I mean, fool and money, right? But I've never been that way. I've put this game down for, you know, a year. I come back for, you know, for the expansion. It's possible for me to stop playing this game at any point and pick up any other game. There just hasn't been very many games that's tickled my fancy, you know, in the last, you know, couple of weeks. But I did actually take a break, the last spell. I picked up the last spell. I saw that you were playing it. I saw it was on sale at one point. I picked it up and I purchased it with the dwarf DLC. And because I'm not going to lie, I picked it up because it had a dwarf DLC. I played through one full cycle of nights on the first town.
Did you beat the first town?
I did not beat the first town. The bosses that came down from the mountain beat the shit out of me.
Do you want any tips?
What's that?
Do you want any tips?
No, I'm gonna figure it out. But a lot of that was I didn't have. I mean, I only had the starting weapons. I didn't have anything unlocked. You know, stuff like that.
A key to this game is just getting more people early.
Hmm.
And you need to unlock the inn so that you can unlock more people, right? So, like, right. In my current game right now, I have 7 people I can get at a time. And my first 3 unlocks is the stone, the gold, and the inn. And then I start upping my people count, because even with shitty weapons, having more people on a side of the town makes a big difference. Oh, yeah. And the other big, like, level up tip, or 2 tips. This is actually one of my favorite games. Movement over everything else. That sounds crazy, but it's not. Because you get to a point when you're getting attacked on all sides, especially when you don't have enough people, and you got to move people from side to side to shore up your defenses. And having more movement points, like I have one guy that had 15 movement points, right? And then I have like one guy that has teleport, or, you know, on the current campaign I have right now. So he can actually move quite far, like from one side of my town all the way to the other. Movement points. And then another thing, too, is when you're starting your campaign, look at what your guy's current traits are, right? Are they melee focused? Are they range focused? Are they magic focused, right? If none of those apply, then you just kind of get whatever weapons work best for, you know, every day that you get weapons. But if you do have clear distinctions between them, reorder all of their weapons and their gear to fit what's going to work with them, right? So mm-hmm. you can just make sure that they are kind of got a priority focus. Like melee is actually really powerful, but without good gear, melee characters get torn to shreds fast. And it's better for you to go and like tear up a few guys and then get back to the wall. Like there's a skill that if you're back up against a wall, you get an additional 75 armor. But you can also get the skill that lets them jump over obstacles. And you can actually use that to jump over your wall after the end of your turn to get them back behind cover. You can hold down Alt to see how far people move. So you just get them just out of range. And then I always have some sort of ranged weapon on my melee character, so they're not completely useless. So if I know I can't get there and get back to safety, right, then I'll use – a lot of times I use the hand crossbow because it's got multiple attacks, and I'll use my ranged characters to knock everybody down to where they're almost dead and use my melee character to just kind of clear up all of that. It gets even really way deeper the further you get.
Yeah, I had a really good melee character on my first go of it. The melee character had really strong armor, and armor regenerates after every turn.
Right.
So he had like a stupid amount of armor, and he had the trait that every time he was hit, he would hit back. Basically wearing spiked armor, you know, and he was doing retaliations. So I would send him out and he would intentionally get surrounded because he would be a living target for the, you know, for them to hit. And most of the time they would kill themselves on him because he retaliated so hard. So
that's it's called spiky counter is the name of the skill. You can preview all the skills they have, too. One that's really good, too, is where it's like called Finish Him or something like that. It's like a tier zero talent. And if they have less than 10 health, you can execute them with no action points. And so you can get people really low, and then you'll get another one for like every time you kill somebody, you get an additional in melee range, you get an additional movement. And so you can go over there and just like walk him all around the field, killing people, and then have enough movement points to get yourself back to a safer spot. The melee's fun. Like as you get more unlocks, if you got the dwarves DLC, like that unlocks the cannons. And the cannons are really fun. They don't require any magic. You can use them with a melee character quite well. Because you can shoot yourself into the air and launch yourself down into a crowd and do like stun damage. And if it's a melee character, now you're in melee range of everybody, right? And if you have the skill that gives you action points back or movement points back when you kill things, it's a really deadly weapon. So you kind of use it as an initiator, and then you go in there and start doing stuff. Like you continue to unlock like all sorts of weapons. Every town you do, so after you beat the first town, I think the first boss is the Harpies, right?
Yeah.
All the bosses, and I've beat a few so far, all the bosses, when it's a boss night, the waves don't end. And so you kind of do your best to slow down and thin out some of the waves without using your magic, basically, right? Any of your mana. You try to focus your mana down on the boss as best you can. Like the one I just beat, which was the tier 3, give you an example like how much health it has versus the Harpies. It had 3 I won't ruin it for you, but it had three different bosses that all had 5,000 health, and the main boss had 15,000 health.
Jeez.
And I was able to take it down, barely, but that got me past tier three into tier four. That was because there's the intro level, the next level, and that was the level after that. So that was the tier three boss. But yeah, every time you kill off, you finish a town, a new town opens up, which is a new level, a new tile set, new types of defenses. And then, of course, every time you do anything in that game, you're getting level up points for your permanent unlocks. And so that's where the replayability comes in, because you're getting all of those unlocks to use. And up through tier three, you can do something called boundless mode, which means that you can unlock a whole bunch of things like extra starting money, etc. It's basically like easy. The game's hard as it is, right? It's easy mode to help you get used to the mechanics, and you get more Tainted Essence if you play it harder. And Tainted Essence is one of the other unlock things, right? Which actually unlocks modifiers the further down the tree you go, but it also unlocks weapons and things like that. But, you know, after you do so many things in the game, you unlock the white points, whatever those are, I can't remember. And after you gather Tainted Essence from killing things and making it through waves, and based on how well you do, use that other currency to do other permanent unlocks. The game's good, though. Like, I mean, I had like probably 45 hours in early access, and I put it down till it came to 1.0, and I started playing it again this month. To break it down simply, it's like it's a turn-based game, but it's also a tower defense strategy game. Not tower defense in like the shitty games you play on your phone. It's in like if you had Final Fantasy, old school Final Fantasy, right? With pixelated characters, and they all have traits and action points and different move sets and skill sets that are all based on the weapons that they have, and you use them to thin out the ranks of the horde that's coming at you, and then there's boss battles at the end. But the replayability is very high, and those maps last a long time. Like, there's a lot of entertainment you can get out of that game for a fairly low priced entry.
Oh yeah, just running through like that first series, like in the first in that first town, you have, I want to say, seven knights, something like that. And each one of those knights, I mean, that's a good like 20, 25 minutes for the gameplay, depending on how fast you get through stuff. So, and I mean, you can kind of get screwed early too, because, if you let your heroes take too much damage, or if you let the bad guys into the freaking, town, you have to repair, you have to try to heal up your heroes, and, it'll screw you over. I think the very first time I tried, I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So I lost a hero, and I'm like, oh, this is really bad. So I have to start over here.
It's okay to lose. Like, you're always gaining currency, and you're always like, part of the experience for leveling up in that game is understanding how the weapons work, right? Understanding, picking up on new strategies as you play. Like, if you lose a character, like, you might as well just play it through to completion. Don't abandon the run. Like, it's built for you to lose until you get good enough or get the unlocks you need to win.
Well, I wanted to give it a very solid try, and boy, I did. I tried.
I didn't beat the first level in my first playthrough.
I got two of the harpies down. It was the third one that screwed me over.
Yeah,
eventually I just couldn't keep the hordes back. So
yeah, I erased all my progress when I started playing it this month. Like, I started from scratch. It's like, I need to know what's new. I'm just going to screw it. I can do this. I erased all my progress and started from ground zero. And it took me my second playthrough of that first town to get through the harpies. I mean, I had already the boss battle hadn't really changed. But my understanding of the tactics and some of my unlocks, I'd unlocked staves, and the staves have a stun effect. And so I was using the stun effect to help mitigate the horde. And I had a couple of people, again, I unlocked ends, right, and got four characters, so I was able to shore up my defenses. I also had ballistas, right, And the
ballistas.
Yeah, ballistas were helping to help thin it out. And then I didn't even have rock walls. I had just reinforced wooden walls at that point. And now I'm up to the tier 4 stone walls is what I'm at right now. But yeah, you got to kind of start shoring up your defenses and don't waste too much time on the little barricades. The little barricades are kind of useful to help mitigate stuff. You can also tear down the stuff in your town to give yourself more room to build. Like at a certain point, you end up like building a lot of shit in that little town. And those, like another thing is unlocking houses and unlocking the amount of workers you can have to help clear out stuff and also give you more resources. It's a pretty finely tuned game. I think Last Spell's really good.
Yeah, it's definitely. Definitely nice. You know, a very good game. Just in my short time playing it, I had gotten through that, you know, that first series, and I'm like, okay, this is, now I understand a little bit more. I've unlocked a few things. I'd been busy since then, so I haven't really, you know, gamed until yesterday. I had a lot of stuff to, you know, to catch up on and Final Fantasy. So I was like, I'll do whatever I can. And
it's a roguelike in that some of the stuff's a little bit random, like your enemy placement and stuff like that. But the bosses aren't random and the towns aren't random. The town layout is exactly the same every time you go to it. But your unlocks, obviously, it's got a permanent unlock system, and I think that's where it kind of gets a little bit of rogue from. Like, it's enough rogue that it's got a very curated path for how it plays out, like a curated path for the levels and things like that, and for your upgrade paths. Like, you can choose the upgrade paths in any order you want. It's a good game. Like, I haven't played a game like that. That just kind of captures my attention that hard in a long time. And,
yeah,
it's on my list this year for sure.
Definitely. I'm still kind of searching for, you know, for another thing. I almost re-downloaded, Nier Automata and played through that again. There is something about the soundtrack for that game that just, it's so good. It's so good. I have random music, play, most of the time when I'm working or, you know, if I'm just crafting or whatever, you know, so on my YouTube premium, I just have that going. And then there was a 1 hour and 20 minute mix of Nier Automata music, and it just took me back, and I'm like, man, I really love the, you know, the audio design in that game. The storytelling is, you know, is freaking top notch, and I almost downloaded it, but I decided against it. It's such a masterpiece of a fucking game. If you have not actually gone through it, it has meaning.
It was the official launch week of 7 Days to Die. I haven't played it in a couple weeks, so I picked that back up. I am on day 15 since Thursday. And if you know that they're 60-minute days, that means I've put 15 hours into it since Thursday, despite all the other things I've been doing.
A little bit.
It's a lot more stable than the experimental version, for damn sure. The experimental version kind of got wonky after a while with my random gen. I did random gen again. They did introduce some things that I just wasn't expecting at all. There's a lot of like roving bands of bullshit now. I was went to a point of interest while I was playing the game, and I was looting a semi. So there's a semi, I had, you know, like 2 or 3 zombies in it, and of course they just beat their face in, and just sitting there looting, and I hear a growl. It's like, I need to get out of here, and then something's hitting the side of the semi, so I go out to investigate, and it's a zombie bear. And his zombie or like Fenrir style wolves with him, like zombie wolves, which is something I'd never saw before. Wow. And their buddies, and they were just like roaming around, and I guess they'd just wandered into that area and they knew where I was at, and the game was like, well, we're gonna fuck you. So I promptly died. Like I was trying to run from my bike, which that's all I had at that time. And still, that's all I have at day 15. I'm still searching for the recipe for the damn moped. Got my ass ate, and then randomly I'm like at a gas station, and there was two screamers that I just didn't catch. And I don't know if screamers were in the game when you were playing, Rusty, but they're like kind of like a witch sort of from Left 4 Dead, but it's not exactly the same. They're not powerful. You can take them out pretty quick, but I didn't take them out quick enough, and they just wandered over behind me and screamed, of course, scare the shit out of me, turn around and try to take them out. And what spawns in is 20 fucking cops. And I just got obliterated by cop spit. Like, all it is like they launched on me, and like it was so much damage, it crumpled the building behind me. I was like, holy fuck nuts. And of course, my bike's over there. So, like, I'm sneaking back, and they're just kind of wandering through town. So, I was like, I'm just going to like wander way around. It took me like half a day to get around behind them to get to my bike to get my shit back. I was like, I'm not leading back to my base. I'm not prepared for this. But I did redo my horde design base. My horde design base is a very silly design. I like it a lot, though. I needed the early game in this game. Again, by day 15, I have like a double barrel shotgun. I'm doing a strength build this time around. I was like, I'm going to try clubs out. And so my bread and butter is clubs. So right now it's a baseball bat, a sledgehammer, and a double barrel shotgun. And my base design is like, I've got these three walkways that converge to a single point, right? Kind of like a pyramid. And the idea is for all the zombies to climb up this. And I made it as easy as possible. Even on the sides of the stairs, I put ladders so all the zombies could get up on top. But in the middle is just, I took iron bars, and I created this like pencil line path to where they can see me. And then on the end of that path is a reinforced little hole, basically, that can't crawl through. It's just big enough for me to swing my hammer through. And I've got a wide open view in front of me. And of course, I'm still not even at the concrete stage, so it's just cobblestone. But they lose their balance pretty frequently on this little railing. And so they'll climb up and they'll do the tango down the line, and you'll just see them all start dropping off. Because they just can't navigate it that well. And then, you know, whatever gets close to me, I just bash in the face. But yeah, by like day 14, they were tossing the hellhounds at me. The hellhounds are really fucking tough. Like double-barreled shotgun, I'm probably loading in probably 16 shots in the face to kill them.
Yeah.
And they do a fair amount of damage to my structure. I'm got a pretty successful design so far. What I'm gonna do is add some electrical fence posts to it to freeze them in place so that I can shoot them. Because at this point, I'm gonna have to start shooting them. I'm not gonna be able to rely on melee the whole night. Because they're just loading in stuff that's too tough. But it's still very satisfying. I'm still having a lot of fun with this game. Random gen does a really good job. I will say this particular random gen, I did it as random as possible. And every biome outside of the forest biome adds like an extra layer of difficulty. What that means is, you know, more than just the scrub enemies load in, basically, right? And so, like, there's the scorch zone that adds half a skull of difficulty, which is not usually terribly bad. Well, unfortunately, that's way the fuck away from where I'm at. What it has, like, half a mile from my base is wasteland, and wasteland is the ultimate difficulty. It's radiated. It's like it adds an extra 5 skulls, which means that your base enemy is basically a cop. It's very close to my biome. There's rabid and irradiated bears over there. There's like all sorts of wolves. And so sometimes when I get my supply drops, it's over there. And that means I've got to like drink two coffees and then like I get as close to it and I lead stuff away, and then I zoom back on my bicycle, hoping I don't run out of stamina. I jump off the bike, open it, don't even check what I'm looting, and then run to catch up with my bike because it's usually still going. And then jump back on and then just like haul ass out of there. Like I try to get myself in a position to where I'm going back out of the wasteland. But yeah, I've got like wasteland that spawned all around my area, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, like the Horde Knight is exceptionally hard now, which is not a bad thing. I like that it's a constant stream of enemies. It's a whole lot of XP. You get a lot of loot from it because they drop little loot bags. There's a whole lot more screamers than I remember being in the experimental build. So like they're always wandering over to my base. So like I've just cobblestoned up my whole base. My base is not that far, but this would annoy the piss out of you. I wasn't paying a lot of attention when I was setting up my Horde base. And it's on a street that's a 4-lane street. I've got it like 40 feet away from the trader. And then my base is like, I don't know, a block away from the trader. And that was on purpose so that I was always close to Quest Giver. And there was just a POI. It's called Moe's Diner is my POI. And it had a really big attic. So I started my base in the attic. And then, of course, I got a farm started on the roof of the building next to me. And then it's got a whole like fenced in yard that I armored up, and I've got water collection in the yard. And yeah, like it's pretty safe from hordes, like wandering hordes. But I've had screamers like just continually trying to draw hordes to my base during the day to fuck with me. So I was like, I'm going to reinforce the shit out of this. And then if they want to fuck with me, then it's going to take them a while to get through all that reinforcement bullshit before they can get over to me. Now, where I'm going to get screwed is if they pull in a swarm of cops, because a double-barreled shotgun is still not quite enough to dodge that much cop shit. So, but the game loop, it's satisfying. I don't know. It feels like very well tuned. I maybe I'm a 7 days to die apologist. I know some people are like, well, you're not getting as much unlocks from just doing things like Skyrim style. And I don't mind that it's like, no, what we really want you to do is we want you to use the quest system to get loot, because at the end of every quest, right, you get loot from the trader, but you also get loot at the end of the point of interest. And I keep using that term, like, these are all dungeons that are hand-designed. So the dungeons themselves are all hand-designed. Their placement's random, but it's all hand-designed. And there's who knows how many dungeons. I've created like 500 little mini dungeons, right? That all take you about 10 or 15 minutes to get through, depending on your gear and everything else. And sometimes they're like a real labyrinth. Like there's some of these, like, I don't even know how I'm going to get through like a tier 5 dungeon that's also got an additional 5 skulls on it all by myself, because this is like a whole hospital or something like that, you know, or a whole factory. And if it's like clear everything out or an infested clears are a lot harder. Like they have they'll have runner zombies in the day inside the unit they're sleeping. And then they'll have these like crawler guys with weird mandibles. And then they'll have these like alphas is what they call them, which are really hard to kill. They take several headshots before they die. I don't have the gear. If I get an auto shotgun or something like that, then I'll start taking on that shit. But, or, you know, I don't know. But because I'm playing it solo, like I need to be way, way more well equipped to take on something like that and feel like that much of a badass. But, yeah, like at higher tiers, I've watched some people playing it like much higher tier than what I'm at, you know, like day 100. Well, there's nobody that's at day 100 this early at 1.0, but watching an experimental build, right? And they just have like a wave, like what you would see in The Last Spell, like coming at their horde base, and it's like two or three people with automatic weapons just like lighting it up. And I'd like to get to that point, but it'll be an automatic shotgun probably. But
that sounds crazy.
Yeah, it's in a really good state. That game's really, I've put hundreds of hours into that game. It's a great game. Like, yeah, I know I want the audio cues to hear the screamers, and I'll turn up my game volume loud enough to hear that, but I'm going to spin a record while I'm playing that game, right? It's perfect for that. Like, it just, for me, it's a relaxation because it's somebody find it for me, but I don't know a survival game that and it doesn't have to be a survival game of zombies, right? But a survival game where there is an enemy and the incentive to survive and the incentive to continually loot and build like there is with that game, right? And then the twist on top is it's a tower defense game every seven hours, basically, right? And that's the twist. And it's worked since 2014. 10 years, that same little twist has worked. Just nobody's done anything that good. In that, like, I've got a lot of survival games. None of them measure up. Like, none of them do. In this genre. Like, just the variety of stuff that you can build and unlock and everything. Unlocks just keep happening, right? Like, you know, and it, you get up to building up a 4x4 with a, like, a zombie scoop at the front, right? Like, just, I'm nowhere near that right now. I just built a bicycle. Working on my moped so I can get even further. Like, the incentive for the vehicle is I can get further out and loot things further away, right? Set up bases further out, etc. But the there's just nothing like it. And all the different designs, I've seen some really elaborate designs from people on the Horde bases. I think the easiest one so far is I want all the XP and I want to kill everything, so the little tango line I got right now is working just fine. I feel like at a certain point it's not going to work as well, and I'll need to have traps that thin out the Horde before it gets up to me, which is will be the next stage for that base when I get the material for it. Right now, the next stage really is armor it with concrete. I had enough concrete to armor my little opening so they couldn't break that down. But, you know, you got concrete, reinforced concrete, and steel. Those are the different tiers that you can have. And so at a certain point, I will get it higher up to where I have steel, but I think the little zombie mamba that I got them doing right now with the it's called a duck bill mod on my shotgun. I just unlocked slugs too, which is awesome. But the duck bill mod, what it does, it spreads out the spray and from your shotgun in a horizontal spread. And right now I can if they're all side by side, I can take out 4 zombies within about 10 virtual feet. With this shotgun. If I aim at the head of the one in the middle, it's taking out all the ones to a side too. It's really awesome. Nice. But it's a very close range weapon, right? Like the problem I know I'm going to have on Night 21 is I don't have a good enough ranged weapon to deal damage to cops as they're spitting at me. So I'm really worried about that. And I'm really worried about the floor that I have in this base. I have this open area underneath me that's got a whole bunch of bars and I got a couple of hatches so I can toss bombs down there. I'm really worried that I'm going to get a cop under there and he's going to start like just demolishing me at my feet. I think I'm just going to reinforce it and yellow it. And hopefully if he gets under there, I can shotgun him to death before I die. But, that's not a real good solid strategy. So we'll see when I need to put some traps or something down there to make sure I don't get fucked.
I kind of miss the old days, and I'll say that every single time I think about this game. I kind of miss the old days.
I think it's more fun than the old days. You can still build all the shit that we could have built before, but you are not getting... You get a fuckload of XP from crafting, don't get me wrong. Like, you're a crafter, like, you level up, like, just leveling or reinforcing 2 blocks high all around my area got me, like, 2 levels. Making the Horde base, like, just reinforcing it will give me a level. But they have, like, it's progression paths, right? Like, I'm going to be a guy that uses spears and, I think, spears and pistols, I think. Or I can't remember. Spears and bows. I don't know. Each of the different paths, like, have different unlocks for them. But you kind of want to diversify and do 2 paths at the same time.
Yeah. I don't know. I understand why you like that game. You know how I feel about zombie games, but the thing for me is I do some grand shit when I play these survival games, and I like being able to do this grand shit and not be like, I don't know.
You can play it in peaceful mode and turn off all the zombies. Shit
that they added was to slow me down. like, I have to go do this. You have to go on these freaking runs and do the exploration and the combat thing to be able to do some of the crafting things that I want to do. And it just felt like they were adding stuff to make the crafter camp mom person leave the nest more often. And that's not why I played that game. Like, I played that game to be, you know, the dude that freaking made all the, you know, all the ammo to make all the freaking the dynamite and to, you know, to mine out large sections of underground to the point where I had to put torches up on the wall just to, you know, to direct you out of the mine, because my dwarf self knew exactly where I was going.
Yeah, you can still do all of that. What you'd miss out on is, so you could get the base levels and stuff, right? Like, the strength tree has stuff for mining, which is what I'm using right now. You get a little bit of XP for mining. Like, every block that you mine out, it gives you a little bit of XP. Every time you hit something, it gives you a little bit of XP, right? What you'd miss out on is the books that you need to help improve that skill, right? Or, like, for me, cooking, if you loot cabinets in a kitchen, like, there's a high likelihood of getting cooking books, right? So, like, I'm level 60 cooking right now, and those recipes are locked behind those books, which you don't get unless you're looting or doing some kind of quest.
Right. And that's the and that's why this game doesn't appeal to me nearly as much anymore.
I like the dungeon grind a lot. But for me, it's like every 7 day cycle for me, two of those days are spent with reinforcement, base building, etc. At night, I go through and kind of redesign my base, and I do all of my cooking or crafting at my base at night. And in order to be more successful with that, I have reinforced my base so I can just, you know, let things attack me. I don't fucking care. I'm in my base doing shit, and I'll repair it in the morning. But the long short of it is, like, the cycle for me is I've kind of got, like, two in-game days to do all of that stuff, but to keep my progression going, like, right now, I really, really, really need to be to at least a pump shotgun, because two shots is not quite enough. And melee is not quite enough. And I need a few traps, really. The day 21 horde when I was doing it last time was pretty fucking hard. And at that time I was automatic weapons focused, and I was able to fend it off heroically with about 900 rounds of ammo that way. But it was also in a vastly inferior base. So I have confidence I can do it, but, like, I really need something other than the double-barreled shotgun, because it's not enough. I need more shots faster. Anywho.
Yeah.
Do we want to take a quick break?
Yeah, if we would. Yeah.
All right, folks, we'll be back. Back.
Oh boy.
It's time for some news.
Gaming.
Yeah, gaming news. Been doing a lot of that gaming stuff. You had a story. We were talking about AI, Jason. You'd stumbled across an AI story, hadn't you?
Yeah, I had. So you know, as most of us may know, if you followed CES at all, NVIDIA made a big thing about generating basically an AI conversator, and it was basically they were basically saying, we envision you being able to generate a responsive and interactive NPCs in games in the future without having to have a voice actor for every single one. Right. And in light of a lot of this news, there have been many of the SAG-AFTRA members who are voice actors have now decided to go on strike again after, you know, the Hollywood actors and writers just wrapped up their own strikes last year. Looking for both better pay on voice acting gigs from the game studios and more protections from new AI technologies. So they're like, hey, you want my voice in this game, you need to pay me and not generate it with an AI, right? That's basically their argument.
Yeah.
And we're talking about, you know, some heavy hitters here, like leading the strike. We're talking Troy Baker, who's done so many voices, but most famously, he voiced Joel in The Last of Us. That's the one I think everybody's familiar with at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Hale, who voiced both Alora and
Shepard
in Mass Effect, and Matt Mercer, I think he's been in almost everything in the last 20 years, either as a main character or several different NPCs. Here we go again. I can understand where all these people are coming from. I mean, I wouldn't want a game studio just to use an AI to use my voice, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. That's a big worry, like even in the cartoon space, right? Of AI reproducing people's voice. And there's even like, I think, who's one of the actors that has the Bruce Willis, right? Has sold his likeness to a company that does AI. And I think there's some worry that they'll be using his face and likeness in movies created with some AI, which is kind of crazy. I don't like that replacing people's performances. Like, I can think of like a handful of use cases in a really low budget indie game. You're using AI for quest givers or something, right?
Right.
But well, like fully voiced out characters, that's another thing entirely. Like, yeah, even Seven Days to Die has voice actors for their characters, you know?
Right.
Well,
it's, you know, you're kind of talking chicken and the egg there, right? Like, where when you're talking about Bruce Willis's situation, I mean, he very much had some very good, decent reasons to do that with all of his health issues, etc. He doing that was really more about security, not only for his wife and being able to handle all these medical bills. He's now just going to occur based on the fact that he unfortunately has some very degenerative diseases now. But also just he's not actively working. So, you know, I could see selling your likeness and the voice and your voice in that case, right? But when you're talking still working actors, yeah, that's a, as far as I'm concerned, that's a huge no-no.
Well, I'm having a moment here. I'm seeing you know, I'm going to a logical, like, conclusion here. We're starting with Bruce Willis. He's, for all intents and purposes, he's, you know, he's retired from the film industry.
Right. There's no way he can act.
There's no way he's going to ever act again. You know, selling his likeness and his voice, you know, basically puts, you know, his likeness and his voice at the, you know, to become available for, you know, for future works. If this continues to happen, we're basically making digital copies of, you know, of these well-known actors that, you know, are, you know, well past their prime. You know, like, what's to say that Arnold Schwarzenegger... What's that?
Futurama heads in jars, anybody?
Well, that's kind of the, you know, kind of the point. If we go, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and we've got fucking, like, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme that also signs in on this, when do we get an Expendables that's 100% fucking AI? You know,
yeah, so those guys are old.
Right. And, you know, as time goes on, if we say that it's okay for Bruce Willis, then, you know, then it would then be okay for anybody that is no longer an active actor to continue on. We're now creating empty content with lifeless characters, you know, lifeless actors, because, I mean, in some cases, they might be dead, you know, and they're just going to continue to use that that license that they purchased to, you know, to use that, you know, that likeness for however long that likeness is relevant. You know, I mean, the Wilhelm scream is still being used today, and it's a long ass time ago, right?
Yeah, but that wasn't, that was created by somebody, right?
Right, but that was created, yeah, but the thing by is, Wilhelm? the idea, though, is I don't agree with using, you know, using AI to create anything that would be uniquely human, creative, you know, voice inflections. Like, I'm thinking back to my time with Baldur's Gate 3, for instance. And I don't think that I would have enjoyed that game at all if the narrator was AI. There was something about, like, the little laugh in her voice at times that, you know, that was unique and made me feel like I was, you know, kind of experiencing this as a tabletop. You know, the way that, you know, the way that those lines are delivered is, you know, was entirely unique to me. And that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed that game so much. If, you know, I don't want to see our creativity offloaded to AI at all, ever. I would like
I 100% agree. You know, if there's, I can understand, you know, for example, some games, you know, you having just way too many NPCs to be able to afford a voice actor to do all of them, right?
No.
But at the same time, it's kind of one of those things where AI is never going to be as conversational.
Yeah, right? I doubt highly. Like, looking at just at, you know, at the leaps and bounds that it's taken over the last year, we're going to get to a point where, you know, the inflections that I was talking about will become harder and harder for us to detect. We will have full-on conversations with AI that we wouldn't know there's AI. And that's the scary part. Like, if AI had trained enough from my voice
just from listening from the to this podcast for the last fucking 11 years that I've been doing it, and or 10 years or however long, and you know, gets my inflection just right and knows exactly how I speak. You know, there is a possibility in the not so distant future that you would not be able to tell the difference between the AI and myself.
I mean, I would be able to, just because I would understand. It's just recognizing patterns and the things that you say.
Well, and that's, and it would take somebody that's like, you know, that has basic intimate knowledge to be able to understand that.
Right. You know? That's true. That's true.
You know, so it would, it's scary in that way. And I can understand why, you know, a lot of these, you know, well-known voice actors would be like, hey, this isn't cool, man. Because, I mean, you know, take this. Yeah. You know, if you got an AI generation of Mark Hamill's voice, for instance, and, you know, he's a prolific voice actor, and you know, there is so many different samples of, you know, of his voice available that an AI could get a very good, you know, a very good, you know, set of data off of that. You know, that is, it's possible that AI takes all of his work, you know, and that has to be scary for a creator. That has to be scary for the, you know, for Mark Hamill, a person who owns that voice, you know, that's my voice, you know, that a computer can do all of his work and put him out of a job. I mean, the, you know, the program itself is going to cost way less than he does. So I don't even like the idea of, you know, indie developers actually using AI for, you know, for voice, because, you know, that is a job that a human could do. And it doesn't matter whether or not that human actually, you know, is it, whether or not the funds are there to pay that human. I don't want that person, you know, that person that has that talent to be out of work just because a computer program can do it cheaper. Because I think that is the slippery slope that we're, you know, that we're facing. And it could cause way more problems, creatively, you know, creatively down the line. And, you know, essentially we will run out of people to take samples from, because there won't be anybody that will actually develop that talent anymore. You know, and that's, and then we become creatively stagnant, you know, where we have Bruce Willis for, you know, 40, 50, 60 years voicing shit. We have Mark Hamill for the next 100 years voicing fucking AI generated cartoons. I don't want that. You know, I want new talent to come up and, you know, fly their craft, you know? That's just my my soapbox take on it.
Well, moving on a little bit, Hasbro is also a subsidiary of Hasbro is Wizards of the Coast, but Hasbro is wanting to release 2 video games a year. Now, I can't think of any meaningful video games that they've released. They had a G.I. Joe game. They had a Transformer game. They're okay.
Hasbro,
right. More known for board games, right, and some toys. Yeah. But they also have the Baldur's Gate IP, so there is some speculation they're going to do something with that in the next couple of years. Starting with next year. So we'll see what happens with that. Some quick news. There's, with video games actually producing pretty good TV shows with Fallout, there's a BioShock film that's been in production by Netflix. And Netflix changed CEOs, and then they vastly reduced the budget of many things they had in production. So they've redone a lot of what they were doing with BioShock. The scope's been changed to be a more personal story, so I imagine this is going to feel a little bit more like an indie film when it comes out. I guess we'll see. I'm still interested.
So, BioShock as an indie film.
I mean, if it's going to be a personal scope, like part of the thing about BioShock has been the spectacle of it all, right? The underwater city.
Right.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I have very low expectations from the film industry these days. So
I do too. Except for that Deadpool Wolverine movie, which I actually do want to see. Apparently, that's broke records for being a huge opening. Ryan Reynolds does a great job with Deadpool, and whoever the writers are, they've done a great job with that character.
Wow, I think Ryan Reynolds is a good portion of that writing.
But
he does a lot of writing for himself.
Fair enough. Something that's really neat, and something I do too, is Steam just separated all their demos. So they have, there's like a demo storefront. So you can check stuff out just from demos without having to see if a game has a demo. You can just troll through the demos and then see if it works, which is handy for stuff like Steam Deck, right? Like you can see, does this play on Steam Deck? Well, I'm just going to download the demo and see what it's like. It's like, you know, they all have their own like storefront basically in Steam. So you can also add stuff to your library that's a demo and then categorize it as a demo so that it's easy to find in your library as well. So you can try stuff out and then uninstall it, you know. So that's something that's new with Steam that's pretty neat. There's a rumor that Crystal Dynamics is potentially diving into the Soul Reaver franchise. They're recently at a games conference, and they were at the Dark Horse booth with figurines of Kane and the Soul Reaver. I can't remember what his name is. But anyways, they had sculptures of those characters at the Dark Horse booth.
Oh, nice.
And Crystal Dynamics has done some stuff with Tomb Raider 1 through 3, and there's some speculation there's a remaster in the works for Soul Reaver. And nobody except for people our age played Soul Reaver. Like, let's face it, like Soul Reaver 2 came out in like 1999. I was playing it on my GameCube. Or
it was Dreamcast. GameCube, PlayStation 1.
Yeah, I can't remember. I was playing it in early college when I first moved out. Like, that's a really old game. So, I'm interested to see what happens there.
Yeah, man.
The last one was Legacy of Kain. That was how long ago?
More than 20 years.
Yeah, it's been a long fucking time.
96 for Blood Omen, Legacy of Kain.
Wow. Yeah. Something else is pretty interesting, but not unexpected. Total sales for video game titles. Elden Ring moved from through the number 3 sold title in June across all platforms.
Blood Omen 2 was 2002. Sorry.
Yeah, that's 22 years ago.
So 2002 would be the last.
Yeah, leading sales for last month was Fortnite, EA Sports, FC24, and then Elden Ring for June, which is still crazy. That game, 2 years old, releases a DLC, becomes the number 3 selling game in the entire world. With Destiny 2, right, having a new DLC, coming in at number 5, and then underneath that, NBA 2024, Valorant, Diablo 4, and Grand Theft Auto 5, and Roblox. Yeah, it's crazy stuff.
Yeah, and that's Elden Ring. So is so good. It's a game that I can definitely keep going back to, and I have to thank you, Justin. Like, you've given me a whole nother set of games that is basically comfort games I can go back to.
They're not fucking. They are hard.
Dark Souls,
but they're not like unfairly hard. I mean, you can always overlevel if you really want to.
Right. Dark Souls, Elden Ring, fucking just, be like, hey, this I need my comfort games. Games that, while I've beaten before, still get, still are different enough in every playthrough that it still makes me like grip the controller and not like space out,
I mean, it's good stuff. I've played too much of it in the last several months, so I'm on an Elden hiatus.
Enough.
Some things that I didn't play that came out just a couple months ago. Stellar Blade. It's got a DLC coming out and PC port confirmed. I say confirmed. This is me digging through the interwebs and finding a post from somebody that said they found a job listings for Stellar Blade from ShiftUp. So they're looking for PC skills, design, and data work, and PC-related systems design and production in progress. And then another listing for a battle designer slash monster creation. So seemingly like there's some new content. It's not that I snub my PS5. It's just... I'm a PC gamer master race. Like, I've got a good PC, so like I look for to justify reasons to use it, and I use it all the time. So I'm kind of waiting on a PC port.
Well, yeah, I have the PS5, and while I could play Stellar Blade, I won't. See, I guess I don't play games that oversell certain things like jiggle physics.
I mean, I've played Dead or Alive, but I wasn't playing it for the volleyball game. Same with like Killer Instinct. It might be a good game, but we'll see. I mean, it's been reviewed well, but again, reviewed well by straight males. Stalker 2 has been delayed again. Till November 20th. So at the very end of the year, we'll get some Stalker 2. That game's been delayed a lot for more than 2 years. And part of that is the studio is based in Ukraine. And we all know what's going on with Ukraine. Very volatile environment over there. So it doesn't surprise me that if they need to delay it, that's fine. Just let them get it done. I mean, initially there was a whole upset of them having to move the studio because they were in an active war zone. So. It's whatever. Something that's huge news to me. So IGN bought Humble Games back in 2017. They're calling it a restructure, but a huge layoff at Humble Games. Humble Games is the company that will provide game bundles at a discount based on how much you want to donate, and then it goes out to humanitarian causes, right? And I don't know that it's IGN's fault or not, but it looks like they've laid off a lot of people at that company, which is kind of crazy. So there was speculation initially that the 36 people they laid off was in a total closure of the company, and then there was a statement released that said that they're restructuring, and I don't know what that really means. It usually means we're laying off a bunch of people at this pay rate and to hire them at a cheaper rate. To do the same things. That's usually what restructure means.
Generally.
It's a fancy way of laying people off that cost a company too much money to get people that can work at a cheaper rate. So we'll see. That's kind of sad because Humble Games have been around a while. There is a man in Japan. So there is a 27-year-old in Japan that through Nintendo's customer service portal made a total of 39 bomb threats. They figured out who he was and sentenced him to jail, but it screwed up one of their public appearances they were going to do because, let's see, what was the... I'll read a little bit of what happened to it. He had said things like, "We'll make you regret releasing such a crappy game. I'll kill everyone involved. Be careful at events with an audience." Things like that. More than 39 times via their official website inquiry form.
Wow.
So it canceled a game tournament, and then they figured out who it was, and then jailed the motherfucker.
I mean, you can't do that these days and fucking just expect to be like...
Yeah, and in this climate, in this global climate, no. But it's funny, like not even that many years ago, you know, I don't know how valid these are, right? But like you'd say here, you know, game developer delays a game and they get death threats from the community, right? From some people in the community, the more toxic people. And I always wonder, is this like 13-year-olds with like that just haven't whacked off enough? Like, come on now, this is a video game. You've got other things to do in your life. Like, come on.
And then 28 and making multiple, not just, he's not fucking disgruntled for one day. This dude is like disgruntled for multiple fucking days. Thought shit out. Yeah. You know, that's the kind of crazy that doesn't need to, be around.
It's Japan. They only jailed him for a year. I kind of feel like jailed and on a watch forever at that point.
I think it's that might be a different difference in culture too. I mean, jailing people in Japan is actually a big fucking deal. But
maybe they don't get to play GameCube in Japanese jails like they do here.
I don't know. I mean, maybe
at this
maybe
point, right? Like you can't afford housing, so you just rob a bank and then you get put in jail for free and just live out your life. So you can play video games in jail here. But that was a whole lot of quick stories that I had, but relevant still nonetheless. I feel like, especially the Humble thing, right? Like, I'm kind of worried of what happens there, because that's been a pretty cool thing that they've been doing for a long time that we've supported for a while.
They had some, Humble had a bunch of, it's not just video games too. I mean, they do softwares as well. And they had, in the past they've had coding bundles that you can get, tools for really cheap. Of course, donation based and everything. They've got a minimum donation, but it's like, still pennies on the dollar for what these tools were worth. So hopefully they, it sucks that they're restructuring. It sucks that people are losing jobs and whatnot. But I mean, maybe it didn't make financial sense. We don't have all of those details.
Yeah, that's true. Did you guys have anything else?
The only thing that I've been looking through is I've been kind of watching the Path of Exile stuff, looking for like for release dates. And a couple of days ago, they had an Exile Con, I think it was. There was some information that was submitted. I think it was.
We can't play it yet, though, right?
No, we can't play it. And basically, we're looking for beta information, because a lot of Path of Exile is, Path of Exile was in beta for a long ass time, a playable beta before they officially released it. And then they said that it was going to be, the full release of Path of Exile 2, because they're going to be, pushing this out for consoles, right? The full release will be early 2025 at the earliest, and the beta will expect to launch towards the end of 2024. There was some speculation that it was going to be out by now.
I thought June.
Yeah, it was June 7th, I believe, is what they said initially. But they pushed it back a little bit more because, they want to have it as polished as possible. They understand their player base, and anybody that knows Path of Exile and plays Path of Exile, they know that there is system upon system upon system that is very tightly integrated together, and, and they do a lot of balance work, and, there's so much shit that goes into that game, like, to the point where you have to kind of like have a bit of a Path of Exile degree to understand it all. What they want to do is they want to make all of those very tightly integrated tools and features for that game, but simplify it so that people
who played Diablo or Last Epoch will be able to understand it and not feel overwhelmed when going to Path of Exile 2. I mean, there's not much they can do with Path of Exile, the original game, because that system brought in a specific kind of player, right?
It's already baked into the cake that that's what it is, so
right.
That's what they needed to.
So Path of Exile 2 being their opportunity to kind of reset that and make it accessible to newer players while still having the depth of the original Path of Exile, it's something that they're working towards.
Yeah, the most extensive sphere grid ever created in a video game.
I mean, it does kind of make like the Final Fantasy X sphere grid kind of look tiny in comparison. But
we literally there's probably 30,000 skills in that fucking tree.
Well, not only that, but there are skills that modify other skills. Like there's shit in there that that changes how all of the previous skills that you've picked up work. It's weird how that game plays, because there is a modifier where like if you pick up a specific sphere, for instance, and then it's like, I don't know if this is true, but this is just an example. It's like all strength is now dexterity, that kind of thing, right? And it's like halfway to three quarters of the way, through your sphere grid path, and it makes all of the choices that you made before change. And just picking that one thing changes how you play your character completely. So, well, it's very complex.
Fair enough. Do we have any other news?
That's all I've got.
All right, then. Well, find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/TheRealTiltcast. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends of the show. We've got Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast. For the Love of Gaming and TVGP.TV, they also play RPGs. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right, guys. Peace.